From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for April the 9th, 2017, the second Sunday in April. This is our weekly look behind the politics and policies that shape Chicago, the state, and Washington. So time to grab the Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll try to get your day and your week off to a great start. Well, Dave, I guess perhaps spring has finally sprung.
I was saying earlier this morning that when I came in this morning, I heard birds chirping, and
yes.
I saw leaves coming out on the trees, and I got out of the car after I parked in the lot here, and it was just mild and calm and just a sense of warmth and a renewal of life overcame my... You want me to go on?
Is this a philosophy session here or what? Wow.
It's spring.
Yeah.
It just makes you feel good.
Doesn't it? I mean, and you think of those last week with some of that dreary, rainy, windy weather. And
that's what I'm talking about.
And wow. I mean, yesterday was fantastic.
Yesterday was. And even though it's cloudy today, highs will be in the 70s. Same holds true for tomorrow, despite the fact that we've got some rain in the forecast. But here we go.
Yeah, here we go. And we got the Cubs home opener tomorrow night.
Indeed.
And let's hope the rain doesn't get in the way of that at all. But
and let's hope that all the work is done.
Yeah, that's true, too.
On the field.
Yeah. Well, I think there's still – it's amazing when you go by there and you see – you know, these cranes are up there for all the construction that's still going on around outside the stadium, mm-hmm. the hotel and things like that. I mean, it's Wrigleyville's a booming place right now.
Oh, yeah.
And, I bet there's money to be made up there. What do you think?
You think?
Well, it should be a great home opener. And I have to tell you, so last Sunday, of course, I leave here and go over to the United Center to see the Blackhawks play the Boston Bruins for their last regular season home game. And 11:30 was the start time of that. And I have to tell you, I think I was more awake than they were for the first two periods. It was kind of a frustration, but I think part of it was because on Saturday night they had clinched the conference championship. And so they played out the string, and Sam, I can't really fault them, even though they're heading into the playoffs having lost four in a row.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't fault them either. We've talked about this. They're just ready. They're ready for the playoffs. And look at the schedule later today. Again, the Hawks will play Nashville in the first round, and they can't wait to get started.
Yeah, and we've had good luck against them. I think we've won the last two cups, starting with Nashville in the first round. So I think we've won four against them this season. And I mean, I would rather play Calgary myself, just for I don't know. Nashville, they're always good games.
That's the new format. I mean, it's divisional round. So
right.
You play your division the first two rounds, and then if you win, you move on. So Hawks in Nashville, I would imagine the first game will be on Thursday, because remember, the Bulls have their final game at home on Wednesday night.
Right.
So you can't play Wednesday. And the playoffs start on the 12th, so odds are good. It'll be probably a Thursday night puck drop for game one.
Yeah, and frankly, that gives everybody a little bit more resting time. Anisimov should be back on the team. And truly, you look at the season, I believe this is the second highest point total the Blackhawks have had in history. So we had 109 points. So no complaints here. But I think everybody's ready for the playoffs to start. They were just going through the motions these last couple of games.
Are you ready?
I'm very ready.
Good.
I don't know that I can wait till Thursday. I probably will be scouting some of the action going on earlier, that's for sure. And a a great finish to the Final Four, Frozen Four of the NCAA Men's Hockey Tournament here in Chicago. And I want to thank my good friend Stan, who dropped me off my University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs cap. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough to get the Bulldogs the victory against Denver, 3-2. And I was able to see at least the beginning of the game and everything, and I understand that Duluth put on a pretty furious show in the third period, but still on the short end at 3-2. So congratulations to Denver, the NCAA Men's Hockey Championship. I have to tell you, there were so many Minnesota people I ran into here in the city these last couple of days. I almost felt like I was back up seeing Aunt Jo and everybody up in Askove. My voice started rolling automatically into kind of the Minnesota accent, you know.
Did you tell her that you have this, that you received a very nice present?
I did. And in fact, actually, my friend Stan, who brought me the hat, said, by the way, I also got a ticket for the championship. And I couldn't go because
it was. What a guy.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Yeah.
See, that's Minnesota nice. You
Minnesota.
Know? Minnesota nice.
Minnesota.
That's what I talk about, yes. But, yeah, so I thanked him profusely and, unfortunately, couldn't go to the game, but I really would have liked to have seen it because watching it on TV and the way they had it all, you know, decked up for the NCAAs, it did not look like the United Center at all.
They have to hide all the logos.
Yes, of
that
course.
Has to happen. Like, if there's a college event, they have to hide everything except for the rafters. They didn't
hide
the rafters.
They can't show the logos?
No, they didn't have. I don't even think they had ads on the boards either.
No. The boards were completely decked out in like blue coloring for the NCAA
right.
logo.
Yeah, there's no ads, and then like the Blackhawks logo had been painted over.
Right.
You didn't really see anything. I mean, it was difficult to tell. If you don't know the building, it was hard for you to tell that it was the UC.
Yeah, unless, like, you know, you looked up at the rafters and saw the banners hanging there. But even though, you know, kind of that banner electronic board around the sides, too, was all about NCAA and that kind of thing. So, yeah, but very exciting time. I like I said, Friday night ran into so many hockey people. I mean, it was a great reunion. And folks come from all over for this. There was somebody talking about, you know, when I put on my UMD cap, somebody was going, well, that's great, but Denver's going to win. And I said, oh, are you in here from Denver? They said, no, we're in here from Fargo, from the University of North Dakota. I mean,
they came all the way from Fargo for this.
Yes, indeed. I mean, and there were people, actually, I talked to yesterday from University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities that came in just because they love college hockey.
I had some friends in town, too. They didn't do the double dip because the Twins are on the south
yeah,
side.
And see, I didn't realize that either, which yeah. also added to the Minnesota population of the city.
Oh, don't you know, Rick? Oh,
Mr. you know,
Rick, don't you,
know.
You know.
Of course I do, yes.
Yeah, but they had to get home. They didn't go to the game, but they went to the Twins game and then had to get home and watch the Minnesota Duluth team. So
yeah, although they could have done the double dip. That would have, you know, that would have worked out.
Been a rough day. They would have lost both.
Yeah, well, but Sox Park was pretty well packed yesterday.
Jammed, yeah.
I mean, that was a great look and a great victory for the White Sox and another big victory for the Cubs, and they're back at it against the Brewers today. So let's tidy up with Milwaukee and then get on to business.
Get ready for
home.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Opening here.
I you'll be there, right, Dave?
Well, we'll see.
Sam will be there.
We'll see.
I will be there. Yes.
Sam will be there.
I'll
yes.
be there probably 10 hours tomorrow at the old ballpark.
But it never gets old, does it?
No, certainly not. And it's interesting now because, you know, most openers at Wrigley are in the day. It's a 7 o'clock first pitch.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
This is interesting that it is a night game.
Is that
for the opener.
Is that for national network coverage?
It is on ESPN.
That's what I kind of figured it would be.
As will be the case a lot of times this year.
Yes. And it's the banner raising tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the rings come out later?
I believe the rings are tomorrow, too. Or they may be on Wednesday. All I know is that they have 25 lucky fans. Each fan will bring a ring to one of the players, and then the staff will get the ring. So that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
They had like a raffle, like an auction, where you just kind of threw your name into a hat, and then they picked it out. So 25 lucky fans will deliver the rings.
But they don't get a ring.
No. What size are you, Swanee?
I don't know.
Oh.
My question would be, who's going to be the Lord of the Rings? Ooh. Get it? Get it?
Oh, boy. Yes, yes. Where's that cricket sound effect at?
The Zamboni that doesn't start?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Dave, go check the Zamboni,
well,
will you? Yeah.
I think I'll go get another cup of coffee.
I think on that note, well, you heard from Dave. He's here to keep us up to date on that's the shutoff cue right there, you realize.
Goodbye for now.
Dave will be back with more news. Sam will be back with sports. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. On Twitter, at Simple Sunday Spin. And engineer Bob is here in the studio now, but looking to scalp some tickets to tomorrow night's Cubs game. As always, if you have to tune away, you can find our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead, we're going to speak to State Representative David McSweeney of Barrington Hills. The Republican representative isn't happy about all that tax hike talk coming out of some of his fellow Republicans in Springfield. Dave's back with the news update at 8, and then we'll speak to Dan Montgomery. Dan is the president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, and we'll talk about elementary and secondary education, as well as the state of higher education in the wake of the continued budget impasse. More news at 8:30, and then we'll speak to Democratic State Representative Mike Zalewski of Riverside. The representative is involved in a lot of issues, including discussions to revive and revise the EDGE tax break for businesses in Illinois. That's all coming up, but first we're going to take a quick break. It's time right now for our break, and then we're back with more on the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson on this very nice and tranquil Sunday morning here in downtown Chicago, unlike last week with the Shamrock Shuffle and all of the dodging of the closed streets going on. Very nice day and up to the 70-degree mark later today, even though partly cloudy skies. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and of course we start out with Syria. Earlier this week, last week, after Syria used chemical weapons on some of its citizens, Democrats and Republicans blamed President Donald Trump for a foreign policy that declared that Syria had a right to choose its own leadership without U.S. involvement in trying to get rid of the Assad regime. Here's what Senate Republican leader John McCain had to say then.
We've seen this movie before. It was when Barack Obama said that they would have a red line. They crossed it, and he did nothing. And Bashar Assad and his friends, his friends, the Russians, take note of what Americans say. I'm sure they took note of what our Secretary of State said just the other day, that the Syrian people would be determining their own future themselves. That one of the more incredible statements I've ever heard, given the involvement of Hezbollah, of the Iranians, of the Russians, and, of course, the barrel bombing and precision strikes by Russian aircraft into hospitals in Aleppo. So I'm sure they're encouraged to know that the United States is withdrawing and seeking some kind of new arrangement with the Russians, and it is another disgraceful chapter in American history, and it was predictable.
So that's what John McCain said then, but after words and pictures got out about the horror of those chemical weaponry attacks, the president did an abrupt about-face and ordered a U.S. missile attack on the airbase where Syrian planes carried out their mission.
On Tuesday, Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad launched a horrible chemical weapons attack on innocent civilians. Using a deadly nerve agent, Assad choked out the lives of helpless men, women, and children. It was a slow and brutal death for so many. Even beautiful babies were cruelly murdered in this very barbaric attack. No child of God should ever suffer such horror. Tonight I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched.
And so, reports now have emerged over the weekend that the airfield wasn't damaged enough to prevent more Syrian planes from flying and attacking the same region it previously struck with those chemical weapons. There's also the question, too, of if Trump acted for the reasons of the inhumanity of the Assad government using chemical weapons on its own people. What about the president's efforts to keep refugees from war-torn Syria out of the United States? Well, while Trump did gain support from bipartisan ranks in Congress, it marked a remarkable change. You've got a Trump presidential campaign under investigation for involvement with Russia, an attack on Syria that's opposed by the Russians, and you've got some Democrats now saying that we're at war with Syria and Trump needs to come to Congress with a battle plan. Here's Democratic Senator Tim Kaine.
If somebody fired missiles at Andrews Air Force Base, we would view it as war. So you start a war against Syria, you've got to get Congress on board. I don't think this war is lawful, but I think the president and his team need to bring to Congress a description of what they're doing. They've clearly had a turnabout in the last 72 hours because President Trump has been willing to kind of be an apologist for Bashar al-Assad and the Russian and Iranian backers of his regime. I'm glad that he now sees that these atrocities are war crimes and there needs to be an American response, but you can't do it without Congress.
That's Democratic Senator Tim Kaine. Also in Washington last week, Republican senators exercised the nuclear option and required only a simple majority for approval of a presidential Supreme Court nominee. That happened, and now Neil Gorsuch will become the newest member of the nation's highest court. He'll be sworn in at the White House on Monday. Here's Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell.
Certainly this is an important day in the history of the Senate and in the Supreme Court. As I look back on my career, I think the most consequential decision I've ever been involved in was the decision to let the president, being elected last year, pick the Supreme Court nominee. Of course, my colleagues backed me up. The American people spoke. And today we will confirm the nominee the new president has selected.
That's Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell. Up ahead on your Sunday Spin today, we've got State Representative Dave McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills. We've also got the president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, Dan Montgomery. And then we'll be speaking with Democratic State Representative Mike Zalewski from Riverside. We'll also have a few more cuts through our spin through the national political scene. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Why would you ever want?
When we come back, we'll be speaking with David McSweeney, State Representative, Republican from Barrington Hills.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. It's 7:35 on this very, very nice and temperate Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. That was actually very nice, Sam, to play the L.A. Kings call of the overtime. That was L.A. Kings announcer Bob Miller, who concluded his 44th year of broadcasting the L.A. Kings, and that was his last call.
Yeah, they won't go to the playoffs either, so that is the last call.
That is the last call.
They are done.
But it was actually, in watching the game, it was kind of interesting to see the tributes being raised to Bob Miller, and quite a career. And he's had some health problems, but even Vin Scully did a video inviting him to come on over, and they'll kick back and tell some war stories. So that,
so 44 years. How many years of the Sunday Spin? How long do you have to go to get to 44? Are we just going to ignore that?
We'll just go right past that.
All right.
It always goes to age with you. You can't help yourself, can you?
I mean, you brought it up.
I brought up Bob Miller. I mean, you know, that's a great career, 44 years.
I just want you to have lofty goals, Rick.
I do have lofty goals, and it's to make it to 9 o'clock this morning.
Fair enough.
Oh, thank you, Sam Panayotovich. Well, joining me now on the phone is Dave McSweeney. He is the state representative from Barrington Hills, Republican from Barrington Hills. And Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Well, thanks for having me on, and go Blackhawks. I'm ready for the playoffs.
Yes, I think we're all ready for the Blackhawks. Time to foil her up, Coach. There's no doubt about that. I want to get your take on what the heck you're seeing going on in Springfield. We've seen kind of the Democrats and Republicans in the Senate trying to work on what they call a grand bargain. We had the governor saying that he didn't think it was enough to help the business community, that it wasn't worth the suggested tax increases that are going on. I know you're vehemently anti-tax, but, you know, as we keep adding to the debt, is there any other way out of this?
Well, Rick, what's happening in Springfield now is we keep spending money. Under Pat Quinn, the budget was $35 billion. We don't have a budget. We're spending $38.3 billion, but we're not funding essential social services and higher ed. We're just spending money in the wrong places. There have been no reforms to pensions, no reforms to Medicaid. That's where the money is. And as far as where things stand, we have failed in Springfield. It's like Groundhog Day. Right? You pass a stopgap, and the deficit continues to increase. When Pat Quinn left office, we had a $4 billion unpaid bills balance. This morning, I checked, it's $13.1 billion. So this cannot continue. I've come to the conclusion that we just have to give the governor a lump sum. Our projected revenue for the next fiscal year is $32.3 billion. We should give $32.3 billion to the governor, and we should allow him to manage the money. We continue to destroy this state by not adopting a budget. There's no hope of a budget. You look what's going on right now, and you have people talking about, you know, bipartisan grand bargain. That's just the code phrase, Rick, for a massive tax increase. That's all that it means. Raise your income tax rate by 33%, adopt a new streaming tax, raise the corporate income tax, drive more people out of this state. We are not going to be able to, in my view, and I just want to speak the truth, reach a deal on the budget based on the politics. People are already running for governor. People are already running TV ads right now. We need to just move the state forward, send the governor a lump sum, let him manage the money. That's why we elected him. He's a businessman, and he said he can manage the money based on our existing revenues of $32.3 billion.
But, of course, there is some wariness there of just turning over a lump sum over to the governor, not knowing what programs necessarily that he would cut.
Well, you're right. I mean, the governor has not proposed a balanced budget. That's very clear. But he said that he, as a businessman, as the person who ran as outsider, has the ability to manage the money. What I know is that we are not going to adopt a budget on Springfield. And I think we just need to speak the truth about that. I think right now there have been discussions going on in the Senate, as you know. I think they're very far apart. It looks like Bill Brady is now carrying a big tax hike as part of his plan. I know President Cullerton and Leader Redonio continue to have discussions. I don't think that's going anywhere in the House. I don't see the appetite, frankly, in the House for a tax increase. I just passed by a voice vote this week, a resolution that opposes the streaming tax, the Netflix tax. We passed by 87 votes, a resolution opposing the income tax rate increase that has been proposed. I think what the people of this state who actually are leaving, as you know, 115,000 people left, are looking for us to cut spending. And I think one of the biggest disappointments I have is that we have not focused on controlling the growth of pensions and Medicaid. And specifically on Medicaid, let's just say up front, we need to protect the truly needy. Anybody below 125% of the poverty level should not be affected. But we have not gone for federal waivers. We've not completed the private audit of the system. And frankly, the governor did the wrong thing by not going to meet with Republican leaders, meaning the president and other governors, 46 governors, to talk about Medicaid changes. That's where the money is. You ask, why do we focus on pensions and Medicaid? That's where the money is, and that's where we have all failed, because we should not be talking about raising taxes when we've increased the deficit by $9 billion over the last few years by not having a budget.
Well, you know, and when we talk about Medicaid, and of course that's the federal subsidized with state dollars as well, health care for indigent and seniors, we always kind of talk about Medicaid as a place to look because of, you know, there's your fraud and abuse kind of issues. But that's been a constant refrain for decades. And
it's just that wasted fraud. In fact, the first thing we need to do is reduce the payment schedule under the Affordable Care Act. That's number one. Number two is we do need to complete the private audit of the system. Right now, Rick, approximately 25% of the people in the state are receiving some kind of Medicaid. We should actually limit it to the truly needy. And in order to do that, in order to only cover people who are below, in most cases, 125% of the poverty level, you have to go for federal waivers. And Greg Harris, who's a Democrat, has had some outstanding ideas on the ways to bring more federal dollars in. We're only getting 50 cents in the dollar. States in the South are getting 62 to 63 cents in the dollar. And we should be talking about things like they're doing in Utah, which includes community coordination on care. So there are a lot of innovative things to be done, but that's where the money is. I mean, we do not need, Rick, it's a fallacy to say that we need to gut spending for the truly needy. That's what's happening without a budget. I mean, just to make sure that there's a complete understanding among people listening, 91% of the budget is on autopilot. We're just not funding social services and higher ed. So we're spending more money than ever. We should be protecting the needy and funding social services. We should be funding higher ed. It's just heartbreaking what's going on when kids aren't getting money for school. In order to save money, we need to address pensions. And you and me have had this conversation over the years. It's totally constitutional. We need to reamortize the pension debt. We need a new Tier 3 system for new employees that's based on 401ks. And I support President Cullerton's pension model. But all that said, there is too much talk. It's nonstop, 24 hours a day. We have trackers following the comptroller. We have around-the-clock politics in Springfield. There's no hope for a budget. I hate to say that. So let's give the governor a lump sum. He said he wants to manage the money. We can give him some special powers to reamortize the pension debt, to make some changes in Medicaid, to get us off these consent decrees, court orders, which we haven't been doing over the last few years, which is creating a lot of additional spending. So my view is let's move on, give the governor an authority, let's adopt property tax relief. That's another thing we need to do in this state. That's another thing that's driving people out of this state, is property taxes are too high.
Well, now in the House, there was movement on another stopgap kind of plan, $800 million, I think. And I'm not sure that that's going to go anywhere.
No. In fact, you look at that, that's just like putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. I know what people are trying to do is just to fund. Again, it gets back to social services and higher ed are not being funded. They're being used as hostages in this whole budget game. If you give the governor the lump sum authority, he can make that decision. He can fund the social service agencies. He could fund higher ed. Again, pension and Medicaids are out of control right now, the Medicaid budget, as I said. And what we need to do is we need to focus on a permanent solution. But this is just more politics. The House, it's like Groundhog Day. Go back almost 18 months ago, we've been doing the same thing. Pass a stopgap, which increases the deficit. In this case, the Senate might not take it up, and then we'll get into a situation. The governor has already said that he's going to veto a stopgap. So that's not a solution. And we only have less than 2 months left in session. And we're going to be right back to the same place, which is deficit spending and people talking about tax increases. Again, the scariest words in Springfield right now are grand bargain. Just so everybody knows, that is a code phrase. That is Springfield talk for a massive, massive tax increase. Higher taxes than Pat Quinn even dreamed about.
We're speaking with State Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago. Joining me on the phone is Republican State Representative Dave McSweeney from Barrington Hills. And we're talking about the continued impasse in Springfield. And Representative, you touched on the whole idea that we've moved into 2018 politics already and the campaign for governor. And I mean, I've kind of had my doubts that getting a budget is unachievable because of the fact that the campaign just never ends.
It definitely never ends. In fact, we have the governor running TV ads now. We have multiple Democratic candidates around the clock. We're already in campaign season. And nobody, is, in my view, is focusing on the long-term problems this state will have if we continue to spend money that we don't have. And one of the big issues that's going to happen very soon is we are going to be downgraded again by the rating agencies. We'll be a triple B and Baa3, but we're also going to ultimately end up falling below investment grade. What that means is we're going to have massively higher taxes in the future that people will be pushing for, because it'll cost us more money to borrow. So it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. People have been talking about a tax increase for a couple years, but the reason people are talking about a tax increase is because we keep on spending more money. $9 billion more debt than under Pat Quinn, and we're spending $3 billion a year more than under Pat Quinn. And think about that. I mean, that's what, without a budget, we're spending that amount of money. And to think that we should go to the people of Illinois and say, pay higher taxes because we are spending money that we don't have on pensions and Medicaid, and we're not making reforms, it's an absolute disgrace, and it's going to continue to get worse.
Well, and you've touched on a very good point about the issue of that credit rating. And, of course, you know, it's not something I guess maybe most people know, but it's just like a personal credit rating, and, that determines your credit worthiness, and you have to pay more to borrow more. And borrowing is a function of the state. And when you look at these, the backlog of bills, that about $14 billion by the end of the fiscal year, I mean, that's been one of the concepts for trying to reduce that backlog, is to borrow. But what would it cost, you know, at junk grade status to borrow money to try to dig yourself out of the hole?
It's going to cost at least 2 percentage points more if we fall below investment grade, which means that it'll probably take us 10 years then to recover from that, which means, again, more spending, more taxpayers' money wasted in the future because we are not doing our job in adopting the budget. But that's what I think some people misunderstand in the state, is that we don't have a budget. Some people think we're saving money. We're actually spending more money. And the most ridiculous thing I'm saying, why are we paying state workers without an appropriation bill? I mean, I want to pay state workers, but we should pass an appropriations bill. And that's one area I have a strong disagreement with the governor on, is that he now has a plan that wants to focus on paying state workers without appropriation bills. When did state workers become more important than the truly needy social service agencies, than MAP grants for our college students? That is what's created this problem in this state, is that for the last couple of years, 91% of this budget has been on autopilot, and we're paying state workers without an appropriations bill. If we are forced to adopt an appropriation, oh, and by the way, Rick, we're paying ourselves now, which is absolutely outrageous.
Right.
We're on legislators are on a continuing appropriation. So social services aren't being funded. People want to raise your taxes, but legislators are getting paid. State workers are getting paid. That's why we have a crisis in the state, because we are spending more money than ever, and people want to raise your taxes.
So you're supportive of Lisa Madigan's efforts in the courts to...
Absolutely. She should have done it 2 years ago. I mean, I don't understand. Why would a government appropriate money automatically? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's one of the problems in Medicaid right now, is there's been really no effort to take off the consent decrees, to take off the court orders for automatic spending. Those orders are there for a reason. We should be addressing those issues so we can actually control that spending. It's the same thing with state workers. Why are we paying state workers without an appropriations bill? And I want to be clear, I want to pay state workers, but we should do it as part of a budget. Right now, there's a proposal on the table that would pay state workers automatically forever without an appropriations bill. How does that make any sense? Especially when we're increasing the debt every single day, and every single day people are talking about a grand bargain, which, again, let me be clear, is just a code phrase for the largest tax increase in the history of the state of Illinois, which will drive more people out of the state.
But the governor says that Lisa Madigan's efforts and those who support those legal efforts to stop state employee pay are basically trying to orchestrate a government shutdown.
No, what I'm trying to do, and I've been saying for 2 years, Lisa Madigan's 2 years late, is we should be focusing on cutting spending and controlling the deficit. That's the only way this state's going to move forward. And my proposal is to give the governor a lump sum authority, not a shutdown. That would actually solve The issue here is that we have $32.3 billion of revenue projected for the next fiscal year beginning on July 1st. Give the governor $32.3 billion. That's what we should be doing in this state. But this whole idea that we should be paying state workers forever without an appropriations bill is outrageous. I oppose it.
You also touched on the issue of Democratic Senate President Cullerton's bill to deal with pensions. And there has been no movement on that. And, of course, there's a great deal of speculation that there is no movement on that is because we've moved into 2018 politics and that this his proposal is not something that would be viewed greatly upon by organized labor and the public employees unions, and that's why that bill is just kind of sitting in limbo.
Well, the problem is if we don't address pensions immediately, we don't address Medicaid, then we're going to continue to have a situation that people will not only push to raise taxes, but that we won't have social services funded. So I don't see any other alternative. The old saying, you know, why do you rob banks? That's where the money is. Why do you look at reforming pensions and Medicaid? That's where the money is in the Illinois budget. And it's a fallacy to say that you've got to gut spending for the truly needy. What you need to do is you need to address the big items. You need to make sure that we're addressing these cost of living adjustments. And the pension system right now is allowing a 3% compounded cost of living adjustment. Inflation is only at 1.5%. That's driving up the cost. And in Medicaid, we've talked about those reforms. So my view is that we need to just give the governor the authority, send a lump sum with some authority to reamortize pension debt, make some changes in Medicaid, and give them $32.3 billion. The alternative is, again, I'm really sick and tired of hearing about this grand bargain, hearing about compromises. Again, the taxpayers, when you hear that, watch your wallet. They want to raise your taxes. Pat Quinn, if you're listening, I bet you never even dreamed about a tax increase as high as people are talking about right now, which is pretty ironic.
When you talk about reamortizing the pension debt, why don't you explain that?
Well, right now we have a set schedule to basically fund the pension debt through 2045. We're going to fund it at about $7.3 billion. We need to restructure that debt. I mean, we right now, we have an insolvent state. We have $13.1 billion of unpaid bills. We're going to run a deficit of at least $6 billion. We are in a situation right now that we could get it up to $24 billion of unpaid bills. We need to restructure that schedule so that we're reducing the payments at the beginning. But in conjunction with that, we also need pension reform, which includes a new Tier 3 system, includes addressing cost of living adjustments like President Cullerton has been trying to do. But it just means restructuring the pension debt. You can't continue to put $7.2 billion, it's going to go up to probably $7.6 billion, into the system every year without fixing it. We have to restructure the debt. We're insolvent.
When you talk about the Tier 3 system as a 401k, I know there are still concerns about the Tier 2 system for newer employees, about whether
that... You have to replace that, because Tier 2 doesn't work.
Let's explain the why. I mean, because there are concerns about the fact that the benefits that would be paid out don't meet the threshold that would then force the state to pay Social Security.
That's true, and that's why Tier 3, and to be clear, right now Tier 1 is for existing employees, as you know, and then Tier 2 is for employees hired after 2011. It's a system that's in trouble, that doesn't work. So when you create a new Tier 3, it would have to be for new employees and replacing the Tier 2 system, because Tier 2 is going to create a big problem for us in a few years, that's for sure.
So when you say we should just send the governor this lump sum of $32 billion, That's what you'd like to see happen, but I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, the alternative is to raise taxes through the roof, which will drive more people out of the state. The other alternative is to continue to spend money we don't have. I mean, we just have to tell the truth. Rick, you cover this very carefully. We're exactly the same place we were 18 months ago. I mean, you could close your eyes and listen to the debate the other day on that stopgap. It's the same thing. And even if something comes out of the Senate, even if the Bill Brady tax increase plan comes out of the Senate, the House has no appetite for it. Again, you and Mike Zaleski, and he's chairman of the Revenue Committee, we've considered zero bills to raise taxes, I'm glad and happy to say, in the House so far. So I don't see the path forward without doing this. The only other path is stopgaps. And a stopgap just means that we're going to continue to spend money way beyond Pat Quinn ever dreamed, and we're going to destroy the state.
That's State Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this. Coming up on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Dan Montgomery. Dan is the president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, and we'll be talking about the state of education in this state, including with special note to higher education. IFT represents some staff and educators at some of the universities in the state. We're going to talk about that. And then later we'll be speaking with Mike Zalewski, state representative, Democrat from Riverside, about the Revenue Committee and the issue of tax breaks for businesses.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin, 8:06 on this Sunday morning. And I'm joined here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue by Dan Montgomery. Dan is the president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rick. It's great to be here.
I don't know if you got to hear any of State Representative David McSweeney's remarks
previous. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He says basically the legislature should just hand the governor a $32 billion lump sum and let him figure out the budget.
Yeah. I don't think that sounds like a good idea. I mean, you know, one of the things that people have really been talking about, and it's probably overdue, is that the governor has a constitutional responsibility to present a budget, a balanced budget. And he has yet to do that in 2 years plus. So the idea that, I mean, if he can't produce a balanced budget for the state, which he's obligated to do, why would you give him just a blank check? I don't see how that's a solution to anything.
Well, Representative McSweeney acknowledges that mm-hmm. the governor has not presented a balanced budget, but says that the governor has talked about with his business management skills that.
Well, again, I mean that I mean this is something that I think a lot of people scratch their head about, which is sort of like this whole idea. You know, let's have the business skills guy, the guy from business, I'll fix everything because I know business. But what have we seen? The state has been driven into a ditch like it's never been before, because he hasn't offered a balanced budget. But he, in the bargain of doing that, right, we've seen massive social service cuts. So in my world, you know, in education, higher ed, the MAP grants, right? MAP grants are grants for students who have low income so they can go to college. It's an established program. Hundreds of thousands of students in Illinois get these MAP grants. And right now, today, the MAP grants are not funded for this year. They did a stopgap to, you know, first semester.
Right.
And then last year we had the same thing. So you've had all these students they've been promised. They got a letter saying, you know, here's your MAP grant. It's worth X amount so you can go to college. And they are up in limbo. And this is now, we've gone through sort of two cycles of this. Social service, right? We know hundreds of thousands of people have lost social services. Rick, I'm sure, you know, people around the city in the Chicago area, like institution after institution, you know, social service, whether it's, you know, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Family Services. I work with a group called Inspiration Cafe that helps train people to get into food careers in Uptown. And, you know, they've had to close operations. All these places have had to roll up operations, lay off people, and they're just not going to come back. And that's hundreds of thousands of families in Illinois who need these, who depend on these sorts of things. Single moms who depend on support for childcare, things like that, gone. The magic, you know, of the governor's business acumen. I mean, he canceled funding for autism on World Autism Day. I mean, it's really not laughable, but I mean, it's that sort of thing. So I don't think he's really proven in a couple years here for Illinois that he knows how to get things done and manage things. He hasn't been able to get things done. So that's why we've had these stopgaps. I heard the Representative McSweeney say that, you know, he kind of decried the tax situation and things like that. But unfortunately, because they haven't had a budget in so long, because they let the higher income tax rate lapse, you know, as he did point out, $13 billion in unpaid bills right now. I mean, that is a major problem. There's a way ahead to do this. I don't know what it is with this governor because he won't come out and say, I'll sign for revenue that we need. He's not putting forth a map, you know, of how to get the state where it needs to be. And so I'm very skeptical. I don't actually think there's going to be a budget.
I was just going to ask you, do you think we're going to roll through to the election without a budget?
I'm beginning to think that. I think, you know, when he first took over, and people, I actually did hear some people say, maybe we won't have a budget for 4 years. And I thought to myself, that'll never happen. Now I think it will. I think it's likely. I mean, he has not... He's not sort of said, like, look, okay, people's lives are more important than my politics. I'm going to get this done. Let's get it done. Let's compromise. He hasn't done that. And we know, you know, the so-called grand bargain, he got in the room there and tanked that. He had his, you know, with the Republicans. So I don't think he really wants a deal. I think he's sort of the school of it's better if we just blow everything up. You know, the deep administrative state or whatever he thinks Illinois is. I think it's a shame. I you know, people I talk to who are just regular people trying to go on, do, you know, work their jobs, get on with their lives, put their kids in college, they're very frustrated.
Well, and as Representative Sweeney pointed out, you've got basically 91% of the state operating on autopilot under various court orders. And he's supportive of Lisa Madigan's efforts to try to end state employee paychecks and the lack of an appropriation.
Yeah. Well, and I think one reason a lot of people haven't, you know, there's a lot of people out there I think still don't, haven't felt the crisis, if you will.
I think most people, right? Truly, unless you're totally into it,
exactly.
or deal with social service agencies, or perhaps need the services they offer and they're not there anymore.
Precisely. If you're relying on those services, you've definitely felt it. If you've got a kid in college, you felt it. Or you're thinking about your kid applying to college in Illinois, you felt it. But one of the big reasons, I think, is K-12 funding, right? They have funded K-12 schools. It's inadequate and it's inequitable, but they've kind of written that check. So no one has, for the most part, seen their schools close or make the draconian cuts we've seen in higher education, for instance. I think if it comes to that, then maybe that changes, you know, for a lot of people, the calculation of, you know, the state that we're in. Of course, in the city of Chicago, there's still a big problem, and that does relate to the state. We have, and this is, again, I think one of the very frustrating things about the governor. He says, well, I'm for education and, you know, I'm putting more money in. Well, it's true that they put a little bit more in K-12 funding in the last couple of years than the previous years. But the previous years were heavily underfunded.
Right.
They were what they called prorated from the kind of minimal standard the state set in statute for school funding. But it's still grossly inadequate. We are still to this day, under this governor, depending on how you measure it, 48th or 49th in the nation in terms of state dollars for education. And that's why people don't like their property taxes, because property taxes have filled that gap. And that's not right. So that adds to this inequity. So you can go up to Winnetka and have, you know, really high funding for schools and low property tax rates, and you can go to East St. Louis and have no money for schools and high property tax rates. That's what we got to solve, and that's where a governor should lead, but he showed no leadership there.
Well, and that's why, you know, there are several people who pointed out kind of this conundrum of we do a budget, but we need to put a property tax freeze into place. And
boy. So exactly. No one likes paying property taxes, right? Everybody probably thinks their property taxes are too high. I mean, that's just kind of a given of life. However, they do fund our schools right now, mostly or heavily. So if you freeze property taxes, you're going to gut school programs, and people's class sizes will go up, and they'll lay off teachers. They'll close programs. They'll, you know, shut art, sports teams, whatever, you know, the districts begin to do. Well, people don't want that either. So to just say, to, you know, it's easy politically to say, oh, let me freeze your property taxes, right? Gosh, that sounds good. But it's dishonest to not tell people what the consequences of that would be. I think, you know, there's probably a way to give people relief on property taxes if you have enough state dollars going into education, right? So if the state redid its education funding formula and put more revenue in, you know, to school districts, as they should, as other states do, then you could probably find ways to give some property tax relief. And that would be a better system. It would be more equitable. But that's not what the governor's proposed.
And so, quite frankly, you probably even mandate property tax relief in that, under that scenario.
Yeah, and people have talked about that in the past and try to find ways to do that. So, you know, Illinois is still, it's hard to believe, but it's true. We're still a low-tax, low-spend state in terms of state dollars. Where people really feel the tax pinch, I think, is property taxes more. And we still have the lowest number of state employees per capita. You know, if you look at the last number of years, it's been cut. There's really nowhere else to cut. They have to get a budget. They have to have some rational revenue stream. You know, from our point of view, it would be good to have a progressive tax or one that's scaled to your ability to pay, like 39 other states. And, you know, we think that's more palatable. A lot of people would see a decrease in their state tax or, you know, stay about the same. And the wealthier among us would be asked to pay a little bit more. We think that's fairer and just going to be the most rational way to raise the kind of money the state needs. And by the way, poll after poll shows that that's widely popular. When you ask people about that, all over the state, almost in every geography of the state, doesn't matter where you are, people think that's fair and a good idea.
We're speaking with Dan Montgomery. He's president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Dan, I know when you've been on in the past, we've kind of primarily talked about K through 12, and that's primarily where your union represents, but your union also represents staff at many higher education institutions in the state.
And I do.
I wanted to talk to you about that because I had Tom Cross on a few weeks ago just saying about how these institutions have really cut themselves to the bone.
Yeah.
And it's not an optimistic outlook for many of them. I mean, we have Northeastern Illinois, three days that they're taking off of their calendar.
Yeah,
obviously, we know everything that's been going on about Chicago State.
Right.
But I even look at things like, you know, Northern, Western and Eastern. And you know, they're the bedrock of those regional economies there. There's no other jobs really there that pay those kinds of salaries, and the spinoff of institutions like that to vendors, local vendors, and those kinds of things.
Well, you're absolutely right. And yeah, we represent a few thousand people all over the state, and every, like those institutions at Western, at Eastern, at UIS, at Northern, Northeastern, Governor State, Chicago State, UIC, U of I, I mean, we're all over, plus community colleges. But you're absolutely right. You look at Macomb, where Western is, or Charleston, where Eastern is, and those economies of those towns are they're built on the colleges. And the universities in every one of those cases, I mean, you could go right down the line. They've already done, going back a few years now, furloughs, deferred compensation, really troubling, closing of programs. You begin to name departments of philosophy, African-American studies, education programs, master's degrees in education. Governor State eliminated theirs. Governor State's talking about eliminating a couple of colleges possibly. You mentioned Chicago State, a critically important institution in the city of Chicago and in the country. It's the oldest historically black public college in Illinois. These are vital institutions to the lifeblood of the state. You know, the economy, the cultural lifeblood, the livelihoods, the reason you want to live here, and they have just been gutted. And it's been a long slide for higher education. The state, and this is true around other states as well, but the state's commitment to funding higher education has been sliding since about the mid 90s, and even in 15, they got billions less than they have in the previous decades.
Well, I remember back in the day, there was the rule of thumb that when there was such a thing as revenue growth in the state, that it was normally 2/3 mm-hmm. for elementary and secondary education and 1/3 to higher education.
Right.
I remember one time when I think it was Blagojevich's first budget, and he made a presentation here to the Tribune editorial board, and I said, what happened to that rule of thumb about 2/3, mm-hmm. 1/3, mm-hmm. and he didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah. Isn't that terrible? You know, and we've seen the effects of this. So when I mentioned MAP grant funding a little bit ago, when I go to high schools and I talk to teachers, I talk to parents, students, there's a real question in their minds about whether they're going to stay in Illinois. And so now we have a brain drain. If you look at the number of, and I can't quote you the exact number, but the number of high school students who left in 2002, who left Illinois to go to college or higher education or whatever outside the state, by 2011, that number doubled. So that's a problem.
I think the net migration figure that Tom Cross, who was chairman mm-hmm. of State Board of Higher Education, used was 16,000.
It's a number I've heard in that realm. My daughter, who's 18, and I want to say it's her 18th birthday today.
Happy birthday,
Eleanor. She's been doing her college search. One of the things I discovered in the Big Ten, the cheapest tuition in the Big Ten is University of Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
University of Iowa, another place. These are places that are recruiting students in from Illinois. They're cheaper to go to out of state often than, say, U of I in state. Tuition has gone up to take the place of the state dollars that have gone away. And that's not healthy for the state. There's very little argument, no matter what your political philosophy is, that education is kind of the driver of economies. Education is the great equalizer. Education is the way to lift people up from a lower socioeconomic standing to a higher one, to make your life better. And it's still that way. It's still true. There are people coming from all over the world to go to American and Illinois universities and institutions of higher education. We have a great system, but under this governor and under this the stalemate we've had, we're withering on the vine here, and we're losing it, and it's getting critical.
Even as we talk about this, so in New York State, they just approved Governor Cuomo's request for to cover residence tuition at public 4-year universities.
Yeah.
$163 billion state budget agreement.
Yeah.
But that shows their commitment. But one of the commitment, and that would cover tuition for, I believe, families with incomes of up to $125,000. It's going to be phased mm-hmm. in. But as part of this is a commitment that if you get this tuition waiver, you have to stay in the state for 4 years.
Well, I think that's a deal many Illinoisans would be happy to have. And that's good. We love to do something like that here. Representative Ghisardi has a bill about tuition assistance,
and we'll be talking with him next week.
Oh, great!
About that.
Oh, excellent! And yeah, that's great. I think probably most people who will listen to that show will be like, yeah, that would be a really good thing for me and my family if I can make sure my son or daughter could go to Illinois.
But to talk about something like that in this current climate, though, I mean, we've got a lot of work to just get back to, staying afloat here.
Yeah, no, that's true. But one of the things that I think is important, I thought about this when you were talking pensions with Representative McSweeney. We didn't get here overnight. It's taken a long time to get here on pensions and all our finances. And I don't think we can expect we're going to turn it around overnight. You could put a budget in place tomorrow. You could increase revenue tomorrow. You could do all the things you might responsibly do. And it's not like we're going to pay our $13 billion backlog of bills overnight. It's not like we're going to retire the pension debt overnight. What you want to do is head things in the right direction. And I think Moody's and all Fitch's, all those rating houses, that's what they're looking for. They're not saying, okay, Illinois has to cut more or it can't raise taxes. They're saying, we want to see Illinois do things to head it in the right direction. And
in fact, that they kind of echo, I think, what we hear from the business community as well. It's
absolutely
just looking for certainty and a move forward kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, putting some rational revenue in place, that's key. I do think on the pensions, it's very frustrating as someone who was very involved in this issue a couple of years ago. We've talked about it before, Rick. We've had 4 pension cases in the Illinois Supreme Court now, some state, some based in the city.
Right.
The unions have won every one. It's explicitly clear It is explicitly clear what's legal and what's not. And to hear this Representative McSweeney and the governor talk about this the grand bargain pension deal, and then they based income on it. He based, quote, his budget idea based on savings from the pension. Well, it's smoke and mirrors. That will never pass constitutional muster. We've pleaded with them. Please work with us to do something legal. And there are legal things you can do. Again, it's not going to retire all the pension debt, but that's a bill they have to pay. The courts told them that. Let's work it out so you can pay that bill, do some things to head things in the right direction. And then the bond houses will say, yay, good for them. They're actually getting something done.
Well, I know, from talking to Senate President Cullerton, and it's his idea of the consideration model as it's known. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but given what we've seen from the courts, well, one, you shouldn't base any savings on something that is going to be under legal scrutiny.
Yeah, well, that's true.
The only thing that I've heard of optimism, quite frankly, from those who believe that even the consideration model would be unconstitutional, the only optimism is, given the previous court rulings, it shouldn't take them very long to rule.
Well, that's true. But, it'll take a year. It'll take the better part of a year at the least. And that's a year then when they're not possibly going to put what they should into the pension systems, which makes the systems worse funded. It's a year in which they score, if you will, savings, quote unquote, mythical savings from pension reform as a way to pay their bills. I mean, it's ludicrous. You would never do that in your own life. You couldn't do that. It's magical money. It's magical thinking. And it's very unfortunate, too, that we've had four times the Supreme Court has literally said to the legislators, do your job. It's your job to fund these systems. And they just don't want to do it. They don't want to make the hard decisions.
You can't create the economic crisis and then declare an emergency.
Yeah, and walk away. Well, that's true, too, right? You can't say, well, we don't have to do this because, voila, there's an economic crisis. Yeah, no, the courts called that out, said absolutely not. So it's... it's time to sort of buckle up and everybody has to do what they have to do to get the state run in the right direction. And I just don't see it happening under this governor.
And with that optimistic word, I want to thank Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Dan, always great to have you here in the studio.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this. Coming up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Democratic State Representative Mike Zalewski, Democrat from Riverside.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. We've talked about the Russia investigation, and that also was in the news last week after the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, stepped aside amid the controversy over documents he obtained in the White House grounds, then went and briefed President Trump on them, and now Nunes is being investigated by the House Ethics Committee. Here's House Speaker Paul Ryan.
Devin Nunes has earned my trust over many years for his integrity and his dedication to the critical work that the intelligence community does to keep Americans safe. He continues to have that trust, and I know he is eager to demonstrate to the Ethics Committee that he has followed all proper guidelines and laws. In the meantime, it is clear that this process would be a distraction to the House Intelligence Committee's investigation into Russian interference in our election. So Chairman Nunes has offered to step aside as the lead Republican on this particular probe, and I fully support his decision. Representative Mike Conaway, a senior member of the committee, will now lead this investigation with respect to the House Republicans on the Intelligence Committee. I'm confident that he will oversee a professional investigation into Russia's actions and follow the facts wherever they may lead.
Now, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, says with Nunes out of the picture, he believes there can be a restart of the House investigation.
Just want to express my appreciation for what the chairman decided to do. I'm sure it was a very difficult decision for him. But as he mentioned, I think it is in the best interest of the investigation. It will, I think, allow us to have a fresh start moving forward. I look forward to working with Mr. Conaway. Investigation is of such critical importance that we need to get fully back on track.
And we will see what goes on in those investigations. Of course, there's the Senate Intelligence Committee's investigation itself, as well as the FBI investigation. Well, we're going to shift gears and go back to talk more about what's going on with state government. And joining me now on the phone is State Representative Mike Zalewski, Democrat from Riverside. Representative, thanks for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good and anxious for the hockey playoffs to get started here on Thursday.
You know, the last time I was on, it was beginning of the Bears season, and you said on the money that they were only going to win three games. And I thought at the time, man, if they only win three games, it's going to be a miserable season.
Actually, I said four. I said four, so I was wrong. I was, yes, but I warned you.
You did.
I know you have a hearing coming up in the House Revenue Committee dealing with the issue of business tax credits, particularly the EDGE tax credit. Why don't you let everybody know what that is and why this matters?
Sure. Traditionally, in Illinois, we had allowed companies that were either willing to relocate to Illinois or were being lured away from Illinois by another state, the option of what was called applying for an EDGE tax credit, which would allow them to withhold a certain percentage of their payroll taxes as sort of a tax incentive. And so whenever they had employees that were staying in the state or were willing to bring employees to the state, they were able to take advantage of this tax incentive. That incentive expires at the end of April. There is a great desire, I think, among all four caucuses, and I won't speak for the governor's office, but to the extent his department has indicated to me their willingness to be cooperative, to sort of reevaluate the program, how it works, what it should do. So I think on Tuesday we're going to hear a little bit about tax incentives in general. We'll probably talk a little bit about EDGE. We'll probably talk a little bit about other tax incentives. We'll try to figure out the best path forward.
Well, with EDGE, I know that there's been some concern because you had, you know, businesses. It was also to retain as well as also to grow jobs, but that in some aspects, in certain businesses, that growth never occurred, and in fact, businesses left.
Yeah, I think this program has always been viewed skeptically by a lot of my colleagues because a lot of my colleagues feel that you can be really easily in the position of being sort of over-leveraged by companies. So they know that if a company from or if a incentive department from, say, Indiana or Texas comes and they make an offer, that the company, with or without the full requisite knowledge of whether they really can make the move, will go to our incentive agency and say, I'm leaving unless you give me this money. That's a bad business model for states to get into. I think, and you're right, sometimes that hasn't worked out and sometimes it has. So I think it's the desire of many of us to say, is there a better way forward? And to the extent that there has to be some metrics in place for who hires and what can we do to bring new jobs in Illinois, I think that's really where our focus needs to be. And most, probably even more importantly, how does this program help communities and geographical areas in the state that have traditionally saw low unemployment? So areas where there's not a lot of economic growth, we really want to focus on that aspect of it.
More kind of regional attractiveness?
Yeah, regional attractiveness based on employment. And how are we looking at geographic areas that are seeing lots of low unemployment and seeing lots of a lack of economic activity? What can we do about tax incentives and the EDGE to make companies want to go to those parts of the state?
Is this a time, given the state's fiscal straits, to really look at broadening incentives versus tightening them up?
I think on that hearing on Wednesday,
and it's a double-edged sword too, because I mean, when you look at the lack of economic growth going on in the state,
yeah, and you very rarely find opportunities for alignment between the business community and those that work in these jobs. So on Wednesday's hearing, we're going to be doing a lot of hopefully juxtaposing, where we see panels that come forth and say, this makes sense from the business perspective, and this makes sense from the employment perspective. So, for instance, the film tax credit. We have a burgeoning film industry in Illinois where we have many producers wanting to come to Illinois and film things here. And there's a tax credit that allows them to make Illinois more attractive to do that. It also happens to be a big part of organized labor. You know, film studios used unions. So to the extent we can have businesses and unions at the table together saying this is what helps grow jobs, I think that's a powerful message to send people and when they're thinking about Illinois.
Well, and I think that is one program that I think where you can look at the metrics and look at a demonstrated success, given the TV production and the movie production, particularly here in Chicago. But those there are also benefits that expand beyond that for filming in other parts of the state.
Absolutely. To the extent we can find a place in another part of the state where it makes sense to film a movie, we'd love to see more producers take a look at those areas of the state. That'd be great.
Earlier, I had Republican State Representative David McSweeney on from Barrington Hills talking about, obviously, the state budget impasse, and mentioned your role as on the Revenue Committee and how there really haven't been any measures put forth that would to raise revenue in the state. But his view of perhaps moving forward right now, he believes the best way would be to provide the governor with a $32 billion lump sum budget and let him make the cuts.
I think I think my caucus, without speaking for all 66 of them, it would have very difficult time doing that, in the sense that it just doesn't make sense from a practical perspective to have there be this outlier of funding that we have no sense of direction on where the money's going. We've done lump sum budgets before. We did it under Governor Quinn, and it really is a it's something that has been tried before. I think there's a lot of discomfort at this point among us to do that.
Is that just the lack of trust that exists?
No, I don't want to describe it as a lack of trust. I would rather I think there's more of a desire to ensure that those who need appropriations the most get it. So higher ed, for instance, is an area where if we are going to fund higher ed, I think we have to ensure that the money is going in the appropriate ways and in the and into the appropriate institutions in a way that fosters learning. Like the governor is it's one area I think where people find common ground is he worries that we have an over-specialization in higher ed, and how are we, if one degree is offered at one institution, why should it be offered at the second? Well, if you do a lump sum budget, we have no idea if those reciprocities are being addressed or accounted for in the right way. So I think as lump sum budgets go, they're extremely unpopular among lawmakers. So to the extent you have to get people to vote for them, I think it becomes that much more difficult. But again, that's just my opinion. I only speak for myself, and I can't address the whole caucus.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Mike Zalewski from Riverside. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'm joining me on the phone is Democratic State Representative Mike Zalewski from Riverside. Representative, we talked about right before the break there about your feelings about just giving the governor a lump sum budget. Let me just broaden this out. Are you optimistic that we're going to have any kind of budget at any time before 2018? I know the House was moving forward with its own kind of stopgap budget for about, I believe, $800 million.
I am. I mean, I personally am optimistic. I think that...
How? How are you optimistic?
Well, it's sunny and it's 75 out, Rick. So for no other reason...
I predicted the Bears would win four games last season.
I think there has been instances where in the last couple of years, we've come together and we've had appropriations bills that have been joined by all four caucuses. And I think that there is going to come a point where we are joined by other four caucuses in a desire to have appropriations bills. The lifeline budget we passed this week, I know my colleagues on the other side of the aisle were not fans of it, but to the extent that it had money readily available sitting in accounts that could be expended for the purposes of higher ed and social services, it only made sense that we try to get some of those stakeholders some funding in the immediate future to try to help heal some of the wounds that they've suffered over the last year or so. I know that everyone wants a broader budget solution, and I know that by and large, we need to have a full year's budget. But I also recognize that at some point there's going to be a need for us to all come together and have appropriations bills that are joined by all four caucuses, and there's going to be a point where we're going to get some to the governor's desk, and I'm hopeful he'll sign it.
But what's going to motivate that? I mean, frankly, I'm not sure the politics ever stop, but we're so rapidly rolled into 2018. You've got the an affiliate of the Republican Governors Association is spending money on advertising to push Republican Governor Rauner's agenda. We've got more candidates that have announced on the Democratic side for the Democratic nomination for governor. I mean, the politics seems to have vastly overtaken the substantive part of trying to get to a deal.
So I think there's two impetuses that could cause an agreement at some point, and that's K-12 education. Anytime the four caucuses have felt like, and the governor's office has been very clear, we need to put a lot of funding in education, and it needs to be a high priority for us. Well, K-12 needs an approval for the upcoming fiscal year, and I think higher ed. I mean, what was I don't want to say overlooked this week, but in the debate, Northeastern Illinois is cutting classes. They're cutting days off of school because they don't have an approach bill for the last couple of years, and they're telling students you can't come to class. To the extent that spills over into any of the other universities, Western, Eastern, Southern, Illinois State, U of I, that's eventually going to become an untenable dynamic for any of us because you can't have higher ed students being told you can't come to class. So on the education front, I think that's going to be an impetus eventually for us to come together on a budget. And I think, there continues to be a desire among lawmakers to come together, try to figure this out. You know, I know the 30,000 foot view is everyone's really agitated right now, but on the ground, I think if we continue to have conversations in good faith, eventually we're going to break through, and eventually we're going to come together with some sort of plan to get people appropriated money.
When you saw that the Senate leaders were bipartisan leaders were working on that so-called grand bargain kind of thing, did you have any belief that what their product would actually ever get to the House?
Well, I think the Senate president and the Senate minority leader were very clear that they wanted that to be a Senate-driven solution, and they wanted it to emanate from the Senate. So, we, out of respect for President Cullerton and Leader Redonio, we in the House have tried to let that process play out. I think, that bill had appropriations authority. That bill had some ability, some things in it that were obviously topics for hot discussion. But I think in the House, you're seeing sort of a more different approach in that EDGE and the work of the House Revenue and Finance Committee is a great example. We passed a homeowners exemption bill led by Representative Mussman in the House Revenue and Finance Committee that's been traditionally been a bipartisan, thoughtful way. It had unanimous support. It got onto the floor. It had almost unanimous support. So there are two different chambers. They have two different dynamics. But I think you're going to start to see in the House a desire to reach across the aisle, build a bridge, and try to get some stuff out of the chamber to try to build back up some good faith.
I want to ask you about another bill that you're working on that would authorize autonomous vehicles in Illinois highways. How would that work?
So a lot of people assume that this technology is far away, and in reality, the autonomous vehicles are on the road now in California, Arizona, Pennsylvania. There's a manufacturer, GM, that is able to deploy a fleet today. If with the turn of the switch, if you ask them to, and our statutes have no idea how to recognize those. They don't know who's the driver. They don't know who gets the ticket if something goes wrong. They don't know if there's an accident, how first responders are alerted. So we really need a plan in place via the law to address who's an autonomous, who's the driver in an autonomous vehicle, how it all works. The beauty of this legislation is the possibility. You know, everyone always talks about this being a millennial ride-sharing type of format. Well, I think about my grandfather, who we took the keys away from a few years ago, and had this technology been in place, we would have been able to have a much better conversation with him where we said, hey, look, we're going to get you to church, and we're going to get you to the store, and we're going to get you to dinner once a week, but we're going to help you do it so that we don't have to rely on your motor skills, which are deteriorating, to keep you safe. So it's important legislation, and hopefully we can get it passed in the next few weeks.
Has there been any pushback on this?
There's concerns. There was initially concerns by the other sort of manufacturers that there's varying levels of the technology. So there's everything from, you know, you're Rick Pearson driving in the car, and you decide you're on an open stretch of highway and the conditions are right. You can turn the switch on, and then the autonomous systems take Siri driving, for lack of a better word. Then there's literally the model where GM just says, call up a car on your app, you jump in, you take it from here to there. So there's varying partnerships, joint ventures, and types of technology in place. We had to the bill had to recognize that, and we had to sort of muddle through how it was all going to work in the statute. We've done that. There remain some concerns about liability and how that would work. We're trying to build compromise on that front. And working through that part of the language, I'm hopeful we'll get it done here because, again, I think it would make motorists and pedestrians and others uncomfortable if these vehicles were on the street and we didn't have a set of safe regulations in place.
Or accountability, for that matter.
Or accountability, exactly.
That's Democratic State Representative Mike Zalewski, Democrat from Riverside. Representative, as always, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Go Hawks, go Sox, go Cubs, go Bulls, go everybody, Rick. I hope it's a good Sunday for everybody.
Indeed. Have a great Sunday. Thank you.
You too, Rick. Bye.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guest, Dave McSweeney, the state representative, Republican from Barrington Hills. Also Democratic State Representative Mike Zalewski from Riverside, and Dan Montgomery, the president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. As always, thank you all for listening. And now it's time for the great Dean Richards, who...
Good morning.
I just noticed in one of the monitors here, you were...
I was just on TV.
Yes, you were addressing the issue of David Letterman introducing Pearl Jam into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right. He was called in at the last minute. Neil Young was supposed to do the introduction. They got sick at the last minute. I never knew that Letterman and Eddie Vedder are pretty good friends. And Vedder called him and asked, would you mind filling in, doing the introduction? And he was hilarious and touching and poignant and just reminded me how much I miss David Letterman every night.
And I thought it was impressive that he'd already began his hockey playoff beer. Because I figure he is going to be in the next incarnation of Bad Santa.
Right.
That beard.
He could easily play any Santa role that comes along
right now. And
that
would work kind of in his kind of snarky way,
yeah,
too,
with sarcastic. He would be a good Bad Santa. I do know what's going on with the beard. He hates shaving. He hates shaving that much. I don't think he has shaved since he went off the air. It's the craziest looking unkempt beard. He had a very nice suit on.
Right.
He looked very nice. And then it's full tilt, Miracle on 34th Street.
And if failed attempt to be a ZZ Top. I mean, you know, it's not
quite ZZ Top, but it's getting there.
Yes, it is.
It's definitely getting there. But it was, if you get a chance today, check out, go on YouTube, it's on there, and check out his little 15-minute speech that he gave. It's hilariously funny. It's classic Letterman. But also really very, very touching about what live music meant to Letterman on his show.
Which I thought, too, and how much he said he missed the live music.
He said he had forgotten until he was in on the rehearsals for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, how much the impact of live music. It was a great speech, really great speech. So you go and continue to grow your beard. You're not even close, but
thankfully
to Letterman. That's a compliment.